This is the Jets Blog Post Game Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Post Game Podcast, a second straight victory edition. I am your host, Corey Griffin, and with me, as always, on the other line, it's Brian Bassett. Hey, buddy.
We're going streaking!
Are we? Are we going streaking for barely beating the worst team in the NFL?
Yeah, okay. I mean, we're still going streaking, but I don't know how long this streaking will last before this Frank season, the Tank is found out.
This season is going to go this exact way, and I think we've already talked about this, either on the air or off. I know we've talked about it off the air, but I bet we're headed for that 5-5. Four straight wins, including wins over the Dolphins and Rams coming up, and then they're 5-5 heading into the bye. Plenty of optimism coming out of the bye against the Patriots on Sunday Night Football, Sunday after Thanksgiving, and just an absolute smoke show bomb is dropped on
everybody's excited from everyone their Black Friday purchases. Yep. feeling their oats. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But that is plenty of weeks away. We are assuming two more wins to come, which means two more Victory Edition podcasts, which means more people listen. But before we get into this week's show, just a quick programming note that if you want to listen to all of SNY.TV's original podcasts covering all the New York teams, just subscribe to the SNY.TV Audio Network on iTunes or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV Audio Network. And please remember to rate and review our channel. And without further ado, let's get to our first call.
Yeah, this is Big Mike from New York. I don't understand why, year after year, the Jets seem to play down to lower teams than to play up to bigger teams. They need to put teams away that they should put away every year. Tired of the same old Jets.
Well, I mean, when you're a below average or a mediocre football team, you tend to play down to below average or mediocre football teams. The first half against the Browns on Sunday was inexcusable. 21 yards of total offense against a team that gave up almost 17 football fields of offense to the Bengals the week before. It is inexplicable. It's unsustainable. If you want to continue to play this game where you stink in the first half and then are a different team in the second half, but the win,
it's just insane to think about just using that example of the Bengals, right? Like, they played a pretty good game against the Bengals.
Yes.
Right? Early in the year, first game of the year, right? And now it's like the Bengals go and just roll Cleveland. And, okay, I get it. You know, the quarterback's different. They're very familiar with each other. But, right, to just be this team, you're like, okay, like, right. To your point, the first half was abysmal. I was watching I had my hands over my eyes watching the game. It was awful.
It was, and then the second half was the complete opposite. Now, there's a lot to get into, and we can talk about, and we will talk about the Todd Bowles speech and the halftime adjustments, but the thing that stood out for me is the involvement of multiple players on offense that were not involved in the first half, and we can go more specific, but I just think that it continues to show that they need to be aware of their talent, and they need to be aware of it earlier, because against Miami and St. Louis and obviously, or St. Louis, LA, and then New England coming up, like against other teams that aren't the 0-8 Browns, these mistakes are going to get you buried.
Absolutely. I'm with you. You can't go down 13 points or whatever it was to the Browns by the half and, you know, expect to come back, and they did, and that's good, but you can get away with that against the Browns. But to your point, that doesn't work against other teams. They're just going to pile on. Exactly right.
Next callers.
Hey guys, this is Danny from Norwalk, Connecticut. It's good to get a win, but what's up with Bowles' coaching decisions? Why take the timeout and not challenge? If you're going to lose a challenge if you lose the timeout. I didn't understand that in the third quarter.
Hey guys, it's Nick here, Jets fan in London. I tweeted at Corey when we were down 4, 4th-and-1, right near the Cleveland goal line, fearing that Todd Bowles, being the coach that he is, was going to go for the field goal. However, obviously he went for it, and we scored and we won the game. I just noticed on the sideline he had a little bit of stubble going on, hadn't shaved in the morning. Do we think this is an example of him maybe, loosening up, and now we're going to see some true Riverboat Ron, Jack Black Del Rio, roll the dice type things the rest of the season and less of these ridiculous punts. Jet up 3-5, etc.
Okay. First of all,
you are the domain expert, so I defer to you.
I was so happy when he went for it on 4th-and-1. I was so happy. All the numbers backed it up, the momentum back, like literally everything backed up that decision. Mm-hmm. And to kick the field goal there would have been inexcusable. So I'm glad that he went for it. On the first half, on the timeout versus the challenge, I agree that if you're going to waste the problem is there, once you waste the timeout, which I don't know that I heard a reason for why he called timeout there. I don't know if it was to look for the time, look for the better, clear evidence. Once you waste the timeout, unless you are 100% sure that you are going to get that challenge, you can't cost yourselves two timeouts on that play. We've seen Todd Bowles do that, actually, and we've seen many coaches do that. So for whatever reason, if they called the timeout for play alignment or whatever it was, and then they just decided not to challenge. But I agree. I thought they should have challenged. I thought that was a terrible, terrible, terrible spot by the officials. I thought it was pretty clear that Anderson got the first down or was at least much closer than it ended up being. I think the interesting thing, and I don't know, do you want to address either of those before we talk about Bowles and the halftime adjustments in length?
No, I think that was well said, right? I think you hit it spot on. So let's go to the second part here.
So how much do you buy Todd Bowles' speech? How much do you buy this Darrell Revis telling them not to come back without a win, with Carl Durrell imploring the offense to essentially make a play, any play, with Bowles dropping F-bombs? What do you make of that? Do you think that basically how much weight do you put behind the whole "we got an emotional speech at halftime" narrative?
Okay, I'll answer your question in the form of a question. If they lose the game, do we hear those stories?
No.
Right. So if this happened a week ago or 2 weeks ago, or not a week ago because they won, but 3 weeks ago, let's just say, if the same thing played out 3 weeks ago, would we know that happened? And so my point here is, like, I feel like, I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm not saying the story didn't happen. But my point is, when they were losing, when they were dropping games like flies earlier in the season, did those same things happen? We just didn't hear about it. So I guess I'm saying, like, I appreciate the fact that he you know, used a method to fire up his team that worked. But congrats on firing up your team in the second half against the Browns. But right, they should be ashamed of themselves. If they lost that game, they have every reason to just tank it the rest of the way. Because if you can't beat, you know, the Browns, then what are you doing? What are you doing?
No, that's fair. I think if you listen to any ex-jock, whether football or hockey or basketball or baseball or anything, they'll all tell you that those speeches mean nothing. They just don't. They don't. If you need another person to yell at you in order to, you know, amp you up to do your job correctly, you know, you're in this for the wrong thing, or you're not focused, right, or whatever it is. So I don't buy the whole halftime speech. I don't think rah-rah stuff matters all that much, to be honest with you. I think these guys are professionals, and they're ready to and paid to do a job, and they're supposed to be ready to do the job. The thing I would say is I think that the way that they coach the second half is different. They leaned on the run game more. They leaned on players that will go into the board, like Quincy Enunwa and Bilal Powell, who got more touches in the second half. And as they kind of put those people and Robbie Anderson a little bit as well into action, they started to play better in the second half. The
defense,
I know, and the defense made some much needed adjustments as well. They had the two picks. They were getting better pressure. I just think that it was much more about the actual personnel and schematic adjustments as opposed to someone yelling, "Get your ass together."
I 100% agree, right? And again, I'm not saying those things didn't happen. They probably did. But, right, it's more about the secondary being in better position, understanding how to manage Terrell Pryor better, using Bilal Powell, to your point, using Robbie Anderson, using some of these players more effectively. Because let's face it, I love Brandon Marshall, but he's not getting it done. I mean, I can't remember he's had like a 45% catch rate on the year, something like that. Yep. And he was like 4 for 8 yesterday, or I don't know the numbers offhand, but if Brandon Marshall isn't going to be putting up, you know, 6 of 8 targets or 7 of 8 targets, like, okay, that's fine. Get him 8 targets because he deserves it and he's Brandon Marshall. But let's see what Jalen Marshall can do. Let's see what Robbie Anderson can do. Let's see what Quincy Enunwa can and did do. So I think they're getting to where they need to go. So, yes, let's keep going.
All right, let's move on to our next question.
Yeah, this is Dennis calling from Flemington. Not pretty today. I'm very concerned about Revis. Terrell Pryor turned him around like a turnstile throughout the first half. And if McCown doesn't miss on a big bomb, Revis gets beat deep bad. My question is, what do we do about Revis, and how do we provide him some help back there? Our secondary's got to play better. Thanks.
Well, I think he had that interception that Marcus Gilchrist wound up with, right? I mean, if you go back and look at that play again, Corey, I don't know if you saw it again. It's like Revis had it.
Yeah.
Gilchrist kind of grabbed it because he was on the other side, like where the momentum was. And then Revis tried to grab it back out of his hands because he wanted that damn interception. So I mean, that was a good play. That was a fluke play. But I think Terrell Pryor is an incredible athlete. I think he's a phenomenal player. I think even when Corey Coleman comes back, Terrell Pryor's the number one receiver in that offense, and he's proven it, you know, pretty much every week. So I'm not going to get too down on him playing, you know, whatever mediocre football against Terrell Pryor, who is having a coming out party this year. But certainly, right, is that someone he should be able to manage or contain? Sure. And I don't know. I thought they did an okay job yesterday. What were your thoughts?
Look, I think Revis is who he is at this point. And maybe he's out of shape. Maybe he'll be better next year. But he's not going to all of a sudden find that new gear halfway through the season. You know, he's out of shape, which he admitted to as much. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the bye week, it'll help him get healthier and get in better shape. But it's hard to play yourself into football shape. And when you're already a step slow, which he admitted in a piece in Newsday with, I believe, Kimberly Martin this week, I think that we're not going to necessarily see him be able to guard those guys in terms of, you know, overall what he played. 2 weeks before this, he would play better. This week, I thought he did okay, but not great. That interception, I think probably that Gilchrist ended up grabbing probably would have been icing, covering up a cake with several holes in it. Mm-hmm. But the best way to cover for him is to get pressure. The best way to cover for a below-average secondary is to force a quarterback out of his pocket, to force him to readjust his eyes, to force him to move. So the best way to deal with it, if you're not going to double, if you're not going to play more zone, if you're not going to drop more guys from the linebackers in the coverage, is to get some of those blitzes home, is to get those one-on-one things. But I will say, you know, defenses are out here double-teaming Leonard Williams and leaving Muhammad Wilkerson one-on-one, and Wilkerson is barely getting to the quarterback. That is something I'm far more concerned about than Revis, because I think we know who Revis is at this point. And Mo Wilkerson just got a ton of money and basically admitted that his issues are at least partially related to an injury that is due to the surgery that he had last year.
Okay, well, you know, it takes players time to come back. I'm not so worried about Mo Wilkerson long term. Dennis, to your point, I think you just got to prop up Revis through the end of the year, see what they can do, provide him some coverage, you know, help over the top, which they seem to be doing already. And, right, they're going to manage it. Marcus Williams and Buster Screen are going to suffer because of that somewhat, because you've got to roll coverage towards Revis more than they have in the past. And then, you know what? You take care of it in the offseason. I've seen fans say there's no way they cut Revis this offseason. When he's got a juicy $7 million cap savings, I'm not saying it's out of the question. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's 100% going to happen. I'm just not saying it's out of the question. And if he's a step slow and he's, you know, injured and he's playing at a weight he doesn't, you know, can't play at, and he can't keep up with these guys, you know, the team is going to have to ask, well, are we allocating our resources the right way? Can he get, you know, two steps better this coming off season because of X, Y, or Z? And I don't know if it's worth continuing to ask those questions if this is what we're getting at this point.
All right, fair enough. Well, we've been a little negative, so let's get a little more optimistic with our next call.
Hi, this is Chez in slight optimism town.
Did you see
the Noonwall just run through the entire Browns team and also run through Eric Decker for the second wide receiver spot next year?
I'm going to slightly disagree with you here, Chez. Quincy Nunwa is going to be the number one wide receiver next year.
You beat me to the punch. Nice work, Corey.
Listen, he is a monster. He is a physical monster. He is big. He is fast. He can block. He can catch. He has developed into their best player as a seventh round project who was nearly cut from this team, 2 years ago, and managed to work on his game and refine his game, and is a testament to guys who are not proven prospects the minute they come out of college, whether they're a seventh round pick, a first round pick, a free agent. It doesn't matter. It takes guys time to refine their games and build on things that might not be fully developed. I could not say enough good things about him. And like we said earlier, it's no coincidence that the offense the offense progressed the last 2 weeks on Quincy Enunwa plays. He's their most explosive playmaker, and they need to engineer more touches for him in the open field.
Yeah. Okay. So just a point of clarification, he was a sixth rounder, just to be clear. But and that's really neither here nor there, just splitting hairs, but just making that clear. Quincy Enunwa is 6'2", which isn't that tall for a receiver. I'm 6'2". But he ran a 4.45 40 dash, and he did it at 225 pounds, which is insane. That's insane. Like, to combine those two things is highly improbable. So the point here is he's an athletic freak, right? Speed, adjusted weight, speed scores, whatever you want to call it. He's a freak. And so he's had the time to learn the offense. They got him the reps last year. He played the Riley Cooper role. He did it very well. And finally, now they're throwing the ball to him, and it's working, right? And so right, to your point, I don't know what's going to happen with this receiving core next year. And I don't know if he'll be the number one receiver, but he might by the end of next year, take that mantle. But I would be happy to pair him with Eric Decker or Brandon Marshall. You don't necessarily need both of those guys. And then again, as we've talked about before, they've got a lot of young guys that I think they're going to start to see what they can get. If the season really does go south, as I think we all expect it will sooner or later, let Robbie Anderson play. Let's see what he can do, because could he be a Jamison Crowder? I mean, not that he plays that exact same role, but like, could he be an unheralded player who then kind of comes into larger bounty in his first or second year? Like, I think that's possible. So let's see what they have. And then they're going to be able to make some, they're going to be in a position of luxury this coming off season in terms of their young guys and what they're doing with their old guys.
Yeah, no, it's totally fair. And there's another young-ish player that probably should get more touches as well. And I think our last call calls touches on that.
Travis, North Carolina. I don't understand why Bilal Powell is not seeing the majority of the reps at running back. It's obvious that he has more than Matt Forte has. He's faster. He's better catching the ball out of the backfield. And it just seems like every time he touches the ball, it's chunk yardage. He looks more explosive. He should be getting more of the reps.
I don't know how many times we can get this call, or someone can tweet us this thing, or someone can write this on thejetsblog.com. I'm just running out of ways to say that the way they're rotating these running backs is insane. It's insane. Age aside, and it's not even just the way that the reps that Bilal Powell and Forte are getting. It's the usage situations that Matt Forte is in. They're throwing screens and flares and little passes to Forte when he is one of the slowest backs in the league right now. Yes, he can still make players miss. Yes, he's got an insane vision, which is the only reason that he's still usable in addition to his pass pro at this point of his career. But Bilal Powell, you saw yesterday on that touchdown pass alone, is a million times more explosive. And I don't understand what it is, especially after what we saw from him in the second half of last year. And then they give him almost an exact same contract as they gave Forte, and they're barely using him.
Do you think Bilal Powell could have the same effectiveness if he touches the ball 30 times a game?
No, but I don't think he should touch the ball 30 times a game.
Okay, well, but I'm saying, like, I don't know what people expect from him. Now, did they criminally underuse him until yesterday, this season, on the whole? Yes, I agree. But is he a guy who can touch the ball 30 times? No, I don't think he is that guy. And he's proved that early in his career. Now, is there a place, and do they need to, like, if you have a, you know, those kind of like faders, you know, on a digital soundboard or whatever, you know, that, you know, radio recording guys use or whatever, like, if I have to fade it between Matt Forte on one side and Bilal Powell on the other side, like, do I need to push the fade more towards Bilal Powell? Absolutely. But am I flipping it over completely? No way, because Bilal Powell still had 2 touchdowns yesterday, had a pretty decent day, all things considered. But, right, is there more room for more effectiveness out of Bilal Powell? For sure. But, and I'm not saying you're saying this. I'm just saying this is not a mute Forte situation and just put it all on Bilal Powell, because I don't think he's that guy.
No, he's not. But he has 30 carries through the first.
Yeah, that's insane.
The first, whatever, 8 games of the season. That's absurd. That's unnecessary. He doesn't have a single. Yesterday was his first game with more than 4 carries. That's insane. He has only 3 games this year of 10 touches total, and they were in 3 losses when they were on their way back. Like, he needs to be used more. And the last 3 games combined, he has 4 receptions.
Now, the one thing I will say is that's counterproductive here is Matt Forte's had 2 pretty good games in a row, going against the Ravens and going against the Browns. Now, that's, I mean, you know, take that for what it's worth, but I think that's part of the problem too, right? Is the fact that Matt Forte has seen some uptick in his efficiency, if you will. And so, but I think maybe they're saying, hey, now when we mix Powell more into the game, he becomes more effective. And I think part of it is Forte is slowing down in this offense. So that's good. But, right, I agree. We need more of both of those guys.
Matt Forte's
of the running game, but more of them in the right places. And that means more Bilal Powell. I agree. 100% agree with that.
Matt Forte is on pace for almost 360 touches.
Oh, my gosh.
That's insane.
That's unsustainable is what comes to mind.
Unsustainable. He's at 157 attempts right now, and he has 20 receptions. So he's almost on pace for 340 to 360 touches for the rest of the a 16-game season. If by some miracle of Weeb Eubank, they manage to win out and go full Chiefs and sweep the Patriots and win 11 games and make the playoffs, okay? Do you think that this offense, which is now predicated around the running game and a limited quarterback, is going to have any juice in January with a 30-year-old Matt Forte carrying the ball 300-plus times? That's insane. And that's not – maybe things are going to change down the stretch, but it's something that we need to see more of, because, by the way, Forte is going to be 31 after December 10th. So, it's just something they need – and it's a 2-year deal. So they need Matt Forte to be useful again next year. This is something to monitor for the season. Yeah. Like we said, we hope that Bilal Powell and Quincy Enunwa are more involved going forward. I think Robbie Anderson needs to be more involved going forward. The first down that wasn't or that should have been was a nice showing of his burst and athleticism in the open field. So hopefully we see more of those young players, and eventually probably Bryce Petty throwing to them is probably inevitable.
God bless the 2017 skill positions in the NFL draft. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for calling in. Big Mike, Danny, Nick, Dennis, Chez, Travis, very much appreciated. If you called, did not get on the air, don't give up. Keep trying. We'll be back next week to talk about the Dolphins game, on which I have a lunch wagered with a coworker who happens to be a Dolphins fan. So that is a very important game. I know many of you out there, the Dolphins, who grew up rooting for this team in the 70s and the 80s, the Dolphins are the Holy Grail. They are the team that you would like to beat no more so than any other team. So we will be back to preview that game later this week. Until then, make sure you find us on the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And make sure you find Brian on Twitter at Brian_Bassett.
And make sure you find Corey on Twitter at CoreyGriffinNBC.
We'll see you guys in a few days. Until then, keep calm and jet on.
I'm streaking to slight optimism town.
Thanks for listening to the Jets Blog Postgame Podcast, part of the SNY.TV Audio Network.